This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury, and this is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. I'm in the studio with the man with the news. His name is Arif Roos.
Hello, Richard.
And over there, somewhere on a phone line, somewhere within Peninsular Malaysia, is Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Selamat petang, tuan-tuan dan puan-puan.
Now, somewhere on this show, we'll be having some news updates and some car launches. We've then got a used car buying guide. Today's guide will be on the 2003 Toyota Harrier, of all things.
Yeah.
Why interesting choice.
Well, it's just an interesting choice, you know, an interesting year, an interesting car.
Okay. The Malaysian middle class's favorite car.
There you go. All right. So let's kick off then. Let's first have some news with that man, Arif Roos.
Right, so we've got a few pieces of news today, quite interesting stuff. The first one has to do with e-racing. So there's this thing going on called the MSP, which is the Malaysian Speed Festival. You know, during the MCO, they've launched this thing called the Cyber Turismo Series. So the second one is finally underway in a big way. So it's going to be on air on Astro Arena, which
Does
is quite interesting.
Alex Yong have anything to do with this?
Yes.
Ah.
Yes.
Okay.
I believe he was one of the first people who started at MSF, or he got really involved in it.
I think so.
Yeah. Anyway, this thing's quite interesting because they're using the PlayStation 4 platform to play GT Sport, Gran Turismo Sport. And I've never seen an esports gaming thing online, on TV, sorry. So this is quite interesting. It's on Astro Arena from 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. from Monday to Thursday. And it's hosted by a lot of former ex-Malaysian racers, current superbike racers. So it's actually quite interesting, but I'm wondering...
I know what you're going to ask. I know.
Would you guys watch e-racing? I mean, that's...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guys, sadly, I won't.
Why?
It's not as exciting. You know, the sound is manufactured. You know, the whole experience is manufactured.
Uh-huh.
How can it be exciting? It's just like two of you coming to my house, playing on my kid's PlayStation, and I'm cheering you guys on.
Right.
But you're still cheering.
And there's still competition.
But I'm cheering you guys because you're both my friends, and because you allow me to come on the show, I have to be nice to you. But if I'm watching it, you know, with a bunch of guys on TV or online, I don't think I'll be so excited to participate.
Have you ever been a video gamer, Daniel?
I used to be when I was very young, when it was called Atari.
The Atari 2600 when Pong was still around.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I get it. But I think it would definitely appeal to people who have been fairly modern day gamers. Anybody that's had a PlayStation 1, a PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3, I think that it has its appeal. And the fact that it's easily accessible to people who, you know, can't drive a car, can't ride a motorbike, they can still feel competitive within the safety of their own homes whilst watching it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Listen, guys, I'm not saying that it's a bad idea. It's just not for me, but I can understand a lot of people enjoying this, and I can even see, you know, my kids, my nephews and nieces, they will all be, you know, waiting to watch this, probably even more than Formula One, sadly.
I actually genuinely think so, because I've watched a bit of e-racing. I don't focus on motorsports a lot these days, partly because everyone's kind of boring.
Right.
But e-racing is quite interesting because I think the level of drivers are much more similar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, in Formula One and WRC these days, the big teams with the big money tend to be 1,200 seconds ahead of everybody else. But e-racing, everybody's kind of on the same platforms, and it's bringing driving back to drivers, I guess.
Gamers driving gamers back to driving gamers. I don't know. I like the idea of it, and I've watched plenty of esports before, and I was always one of those people that thought I wouldn't enjoy watching other people play video games, and yet I find myself being drawn to it.
Yeah,
it's 2 a.m. in the morning, some guy's playing some random video game, and I'm like, ooh, what is this? And then an hour later, I'm still sat there going, what have I just watched? But I've clearly enjoyed it. Otherwise, I would have gotten up and done something else, right?
Well, Richard, I just got to add something before we take this conversation to an end.
Go on, then.
You obviously have a very boring life. and I think you have to subscribe to a lot of old P. Romney movies to understand what entertainment is really all about.
This is probably true. This is probably true.
And with that, let's move on to the next piece of news, which is really, really good. It has to do with Google Maps and the fact that it now shows real-time locations of Rapid Bus, Go KL, and Smart Selangor buses around the Klang Valley, which is amazing. It's late, but it's there.
Do they have timetables yet?
Apparently. They didn't say anything else.
Even if they don't have timetables, we can see how far away they are.
Yeah. You just don't know where...
Yeah, you know something? I'm actually going to try this tomorrow.
You're actually getting public transportation?
Actually, for the last few years, I have been taking the PJ Free bus on a regular basis.
Wow. Mm. Well, you kept that very quiet.
I did keep it very quiet because it was a free bus. I'm not supporting any business. I'm actually taking away.
Right.
Yeah. Google Maps, that's all great and all, but there's another piece of news, super interesting piece of news. You know how, these past two governments have been selling number plates quite a lot, and we covered that quite a bit. I mean, they have this new number plate series called SYG. I don't know, Sayang, I guess. It's such a Malaysian thing, but... Right. Apparently, from 97 number plate series, they've collected 110 million ringgit, which means that, you know, one number plate of this series costs about 1,200,000 ringgit. That's a lot of money.
Can somebody explain this to me? I mean, I know we've mentioned it before, I think, on the show about how some people who have clearly too much money, right?
And those are the people who are buying premium cars right now.
Right. And they clearly love themselves a lot and like the initials and whatever. But to spend 1 million ringgit.
That is about the price of a brand new BMW M850i. And I guess you would spend another 1 million to put your own number plate on it. Right. But, you know.
Does it not just seem like I can't say it's a waste of money. Otherwise, people wouldn't be spending 110,289,072 ringgit in total.
Yeah. This brings up another conversation, right? You know, because sometimes you'll flip through those Auto Trader magazines and then you go through the back pages and then people are actually selling these number plates.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably a market for reselling these old ones,
actually,
right?
I remember my dad selling one of his that he had on a car years and years and years ago. It was a terrible secondhand car, but the license plate was SAL44ON. So if you remove the 44, it says salon. You know, and a hairdresser... A hairdresser bought his license plate, and he made a lot of money.
So was the hairdresser driving a Mazda MX-5?
Do you know what? I don't even remember what it was, but I just remember my dad saying, I can sell my license plate. Somebody wants to buy it. And he was like, sell it. Just sell it.
There is a big market.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's finally talk about cars. It's been more than a few minutes. So the big one is obviously the new Toyota RAV4. It's arrived.
Yes, people have been talking about it for 8 months.
196,000 ringgit is the starting price, though. What do you think of that?
It's definitely high. Everyone is so negative about the price. Everyone is making all kinds of remarks. I can understand. But please remember this. The rivals are all local assembled. This is fully imported. If they were to local assemble it, the price will be comparable to the rivals. The reason why they're not local assembling it is because Toyota has not had ever in this region a RAV4 local assembly program from day one until now. So you never know. Maybe at some point, Malaysia or Indonesia or Thailand might become an assembly hub for the RAV4.
So the RAV4 goes against the likes of the CR-V, I guess?
Yes, the Mazda CX-5, the Subaru Forester.
Well, the 196,000 ringgit is the base model, which gets you a 2-liter four-cylinder and a CVT gearbox. But if you spend 20,000 ringgit more, at 215,000 ringgit, you get 2.5 liters and an automatic gearbox, a proper one.
Right.
And, you know, the RAV4, it's as well-built as all Toyotas are anyway. So you're not really losing much when you spend that kind of money.
True. The only little bit of a downside is if you take at the top of the range module, which is 215,000, that's just 20,000 less than a fully imported brand new with warranty from UMW Toyota Harrier.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ask me, I will say pay extra 20,000, go and get the Harrier.
Because it's practically a Lexus. We'll talk about that later.
Exactly.
The other two cars, there's three, but the other two cars come from Munich. And One of them is the new BMW X6, the famous one, which they promoted with the Vanta Black color and those light-up grills. They didn't bring that one here, but they brought the M40i version, which comes in with a 3-liter inline-six turbo engine with 340 horsepower. Obviously not as practical as the BMW X5, but it's a very bold-looking car.
Bold, yeah.
704,000 ringgit is the price tag. The other super interesting BMW that's coming here is BMW's most beautiful car right now. The BMW.
Have you noticed these superlatives he's throwing out right now? Whenever we talk
about BMW, yes.
Yeah, every time.
I want them to give me this car to test drive.
Right.
This is the BMW 840i Grand Coupe.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's the same engine as the X6, the 3-liter inline six, but it costs 937,000 ringgit, which is very, very curious pricing. I know it's a completely built up unit, but the equivalent Mercedes, the CLS 450, is more than 200,000 ringgit cheaper, and it's a direct competitor to this. Maybe the Mercedes slightly more powerful.
Right.
Kind of curious with the pricing, really. Another news from BMW is that if you buy a brand new BMW from them starting July, and if you own an Apple phone, you will be able to unlock your car using Apple's new iOS 14 feature, Car Key.
Wow.
So if you don't have an Apple phone, what does that happen?
You're back to using your car keys.
Right.
BMW gives you so many options to be able to unlock your car now. I mean, you've got obviously your key, your proximity key, your tap card thing that you can put in your wallet, and now you can use your phone, which is something that Tesla has been doing quite a while already, but
I'd
nice
just
to
like
see
to
that.
Be able to shout at my car, you know, just walking down the steps, oi, morning,
and it starts
up. that'd be perfect.
And
none of us can copy your accent.
Exactly. Nobody can copy my accent because they can't figure out where I'm from.
Exactly.
The final car is a Ferrari. It is called the Ferrari Roma.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. Superb. I think it's the best looking Ferrari to come out for almost 20 years.
Exactly, because it's got curves, not sharp edges, curves.
Yeah.
I like its nose, I've got to say.
Yeah. Okay. It's not vulgar, is it?
It's very aggressive.
Yeah. Basically, it's a smaller 2+2 Ferrari with a V8. We haven't seen one of those since the Ferrari FF, I believe.
Right.
And it's meant to compete with Aston Martin V8 Vantage, the Mercedes AMG GT, and it's probably going to cost about the same at 1.6 million ringgit. Or more.
Can we just talk about some of the color options on this?
Yeah.
There's about five different versions, I believe. There's one, it's kind of like a bullet gray, kind of stormy, kind of weathery. Oh, that one is, yeah.
But would you buy a gray Ferrari?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely would. I mean, I looked at the red one, I looked at the yellow one, and it's like, well, everybody's either, if you're buying a Ferrari, you know, you're going to have a yellow one or a red one, right?
That's true.
Buy something a bit different if you're going to spend 1.6 mil.
Hot pink.
No, don't do that.
Anyway, I don't think we should trouble you with all of the engine details and everything, but the simple fact is it does 0 to 200 kilometers an hour faster than a Myvi gets to 100. So, yeah.
Good enough.
Suffice to say, it moves a little bit.
Yeah. Moving on to global car launches, we saw two this week, big ones this week. One of them is Kia Grand Carnival. It's a really, really nice looking car now. Obviously, the biggest selling point of the Carnival is the fact that it's also available as a 9-seater.
Mm.
And this one really looks like an Alphard, but more family-friendly.
Mm.
And, you know, they've been calling this Kia Grand Carnival not an MPV. It's a grand utility vehicle.
Mm. What?
Yeah. The other interesting car that got facelifted and got launched this week, in fact, today, was the Volkswagen Arteon. We haven't even driven those.
Yeah, I like the look of these as well. I've always liked these.
Yeah. Have you driven the Arteon yet, Daniel?
No, I've not. But I've had a very close encounter with it in Singapore 2 years ago when they first launched it. Gorgeous looking car.
Right.
Beautifully crafted interior. And suddenly you start realizing, is this a Volkswagen or is this an Audi?
Exactly.
Right, yeah. You know? Yeah.
Exactly. The best part about it is that they've made a shooting brake version, which is even more beautiful. I mean, the old fastback Arteon was kind of nice, but I mean, hatchbacks, especially with that sloping roofline, isn't quite as practical. So the shooting brake, I hope everybody goes out and buy one. I hope they bring it here.
the only thing I got to say is, you know, the Arteon was supposed to be launched in Malaysia last year. Then it was postponed to middle of the year. Now it's postponed to probably end of this year. It's sad because this is such a gorgeous car. It's what you call a showroom clickbait, you know?
Yeah.
You put this car in any Volkswagen showroom, people will go in just to look at it, and then they might end up buying the basic Polo. Doesn't matter, but this is the car that, you know, grabs people's attention. It's like the Kia Stinger for Kia. You put it in any Kia showroom, people will just gravitate to just have a look at it, you know?
Yep. It's almost like this is actually what we're capable of.
Right, on that note, shall we wrap up for this segment and come back with some used car buying guides?
Yes, we shall.
Let's do that. You are, of course, tuned into Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM, with me, Rich Bradbury, Arif Roos, and, of course, Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. We're going to take a short break when we come back. A used car guide for the 2003 Toyota Harrier 240G, also known as the Harrier XU30.
Or the Lexus Harrier.
Or the Lexus
Harrier. Or the Lexus RX.
Or the Lexus RX. Any more?
No, no. Not yet.
BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Arif Roos.
Over there on the phone line somewhere is
Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my.
If you're only just joining us, we've had a little bit of news earlier on. We talked a little bit about e-racing, Google Maps, JPJ's eBid collection at 110 million ringgit. Then some local car launches, of course, with the RAV4, the X6, the 840i Grand Coupe, a Ferrari, and then some global launches with the Kia Grand Carnival and the Volkswagen Arteon and the facelift.
Yep.
If you missed any part of the first part of the show, the podcast will be up very shortly. And of course, now we should talk to you about buying a used car. In particular, I'm not even going to say it again, because when I tried to say it earlier on, there were like 45 different versions, but we'll stick with the 2003 Toyota Harrier 240G.
Take it away, Daniel.
Okay, to start with, Lexus Harrier, Toyota Harrier, whatever you call it, it's a Harrier, you know? Now, when it first came out in 1999 in Malaysia, why I say 1999? The car was introduced in Japan in 1997. So 2 years after its introduction in Japan, where it was just pure runaway success, AP holders in Malaysia, reconditioned car importers, realized that they could start selling it in Malaysia. So 2 years later, 1999, it started coming in. And there was such a rush in demand that grey importers could not keep up with the demand from Malaysians. They just loved it. Because why? Malaysians were starting to buy SUVs. After the financial crisis, there was money coming in. And on top of that, you're talking about a vehicle that is almost like, it may not be a Lexus, but it's got all the Lexus features, fit, finish, feel on the inside.
Well, yeah, true. I've always thought that, like, this is more of a Japanese domestic market Toyota. You know, I feel like the Japanese Toyotas are a bit more posh than the ones everybody else gets,
of course,
around the world.
Of course, because the Japanese have got very high standards. So this car sold very well. In fact, they had a two-wheel drive and a four-wheel drive. And the funny thing is, most of the cars brought in at that time were actually the two-wheel drive. Now, what happened is, there were a number of Malaysians not realizing that they had bought a two-wheel drive, but seeing the vehicle, they thought it was a four-wheel drive. So in the early days, there were some customers who drove it into their Ladang and their Dusun, and they went back to their hometowns, and they got stuck. Because why? It's a two-wheel drive. Until you go underneath and see, oh my God, there's no four-wheel drive system, you know?
Mm.
That was the first mistake. And then consumers got a bit smarter, and then they knew how to pick between the four-wheel drive and two-wheel drive. By this time, thousands were on the road, and UMW Malaysia were not selling this car officially. So the grey market just made tons of money. Then came the second generation. And we're looking at the second generation today because the prices of the second generation model, which I think have really dropped to a point where you cannot ignore them, because this car still looks very fresh. If you look at the pictures I've got on DSM.my, the car still looks very modern. The styling looks very fresh. If you look at the interior, these interiors are still very, very modern.
I thought it was an interior of a Honda Insight, 10 years newer.
Correct.
And that interior from 2003 still holds up today.
Right. And, you know, if you get into these cars even till today, I mean, after so many years, the interiors are still solid. It's very hard to find an interior of a Harrier that's got cracked bits and broken bits, unless it's been abused. But the average unit still feels like new. And the seating comfort is absolutely spot on. The only problem is these cars never came with a very exciting engine. So it's nice to drive. It's got decent speed on the road, but it's not something you can chase up to the European rivals.
Yeah.
But it doesn't break down, it doesn't give you hassle, and it's cheap to maintain. So these cars sold very well.
These engines that were in the Harrier came from the Toyota Camry, didn't it?
Exactly. So spare parts, no issue. Going to a workshop, no issue. If you need to get like a second-hand gearbox or second-hand transfer case or anything that you need, it's all easily available.
We just spoke a lot about the names of this car, right? And back in 1999, I believe Toyota and Lexus had developed this car together, but it was sold as a Toyota in Japan, but as a Lexus everywhere else in the world. So you're basically getting a Lexus that's badged as a Toyota, yes, especially.
But with the Lexus, you get slightly better leather, you get a better sound system, you get a different suspension setting. I think even, you know, certain bits and pieces in the car, you know, like where you see the wood trim, probably they use a slightly higher quality trim, you know. At that time, the difference between the Lexus Harrier, and it's called a Lexus 350 RX, and the Harrier were actually very little difference, not far apart. But today, they're very far apart.
What was it that you think people loved about this, Daniel?
Okay, styling-wise, very modern. And at that time, the German equivalent SUVs were much more expensive. The Japanese rivals were much lower price, and they did not have something right in that same segment. That means like Mazda, right, Honda, Toyota didn't have something to compete directly. You know, they all were either much lower price, or you had the Germans or the Europeans, who would say, which were higher priced.
Either a Pajero or a Land Rover,
yes,
I guess.
Correct.
So, I mean, I guess this kind of filled in that gap, right?
Exactly. And, you know, if you get into one of these, the rear legroom is very nice. So it also ended up being like someone's executive travel, because easy to get in and out, and you got a lot of leg room, and you can have a chauffeur in front. So it made a lot of sense for a lot of people.
I think it's really popular just among suburban families. And because, I don't know, I've seen a lot of American films where and TV shows where Harriers are just everywhere. It would be used in the film to portray like a family going to on holiday or something like that, or going to soccer practice.
A North American family.
Yeah. I've always thought that buyers of Harrier kind of wanted that luxury feel, that luxury drive, but, you know, they don't really want to bother themselves by having to buy a Range Rover or BMW X5.
True.
Which both... those cars in 2003 aged much worse than this one.
Exactly. And they were expensive to maintain.
Yeah.
I mean, in comparison to this car, the maintenance of this car is like a Honda CR-V or a Mazda CX-5. So generally, you're getting a premium product with the maintenance of a lower price product. And yet, you can park it next to a German rival, and you're not actually frowned upon as someone with less money. You see what I mean?
Yeah. What about... so some of the issues with this car then, Daniel, you know, I mean, we're talking about how nice it looks, how attractive it is, and how much of an appeal it has. But like everything, it must have had some, you know, downfalls.
Okay. If you talk about downfalls, number one, because of the size of the engine and the weight of the car, because it's got a lot of features, it's a little bit bulky because there's a lot of room inside. It is a heavy vehicle. And so consumption is not the best, especially in-town consumption.
Even if you get like the 2.4 or the 3-liter or 3.5, they're all the same.
The 2.4 actually is no different than the 3-liter. There may be a big difference in engine capacity, but actually the amount of petrol you use is almost the same. It's negligible difference. If you can find a 3-liter, and the road tax is also not that far off. So if you find a 3-liter in very good condition, and the price is just a couple of thousand more, it's actually better to go for the 3-liter.
Yeah.
You know, in the long run. And because on the highway, it'll give you a bit more better pickup speed and better cruising speed, you know? But now, when you talk about issues, the only issues that I've heard from owners has been the gearbox.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, there's been some small things like with the entertainment system, but then, you know, that comes with age. But you don't have problems with the electricals. You don't have problems with rubber seals or NVH or suspension. You do get the odd person saying, oh, you know, my suspension is squeaking and making noise. But of course, this is not a vehicle for you to take off-road, even though it's got the SUV ride height. So if you're going to take it off-road, of course, you're going to push the suspension to its limit. And then there will be some wear and tear, which, you know, you'll say, oh, why is it making all this noise? But if you use it as a car, if you use it on-road and just drive it as like you would drive a car, there's hardly any issue with the suspension and braking system. So when you come back to the gearbox, now, the problems I've heard with the gearbox tend to be more towards it being a little bit clunky or jerky, and, you know, sometimes it's not engaging properly. I think that is more to do with the wrong type of lubricant being used, because These cars were never sold officially. So officially, there was no guidebook on what kind of lubricant you should use long time ago. Today, you can go online and find out everything. But those days, they see this vehicle coming in. They said, oh, Toyota. Oh, okay, like, just use the normal lubricant. So if you use the wrong gearbox oil, of course, you're going to have problems.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, and you're not going to get, sorry to interrupt, but you're not going to get a Harrier owner that goes racing with it. So you're not going to get someone who's going to be trashing the gearbox or using it beyond its limit of its capability. So it has to be more towards what the workshop did and what the workshop did wrong.
I kind of agree with that, because like we said last week about the Pajero, right? These Toyotas from the 90s and early 2000s were kind of bulletproof.
Yes.
Not Toyotas, Japanese cars in general, they were built so well. And you hear all the stories that these cars can run forever and ever and ever. And all you have to do is keep up with the oil changes, keep up with the parts changes and the bushings and all that stuff. I've tried looking for some common problems that people have had. It all has to do with seals and maybe the coil packs, which fail in every car, really, after a number of years.
Yes.
They spelt some stuff out, like, I guess they were cherry picking because, you know,
couldn't find anything.
Yeah, it was kind of difficult. They mentioned the transmission thing, but then they also said, like, oh yeah, that's due to the seals at the back of the transmission that doesn't seal it up really well. Mm. They even mentioned stuff like, oh, rust, but rust, every car from 1995 to 2005 had rust issues.
Exactly.
So really, I mean, it sounds horrible that we're just praising this car, but that's kind of the way it is. It's the same reason why you would buy a 95 or 96 Toyota Camry, because the car will last forever.
It's almost bulletproof, okay. Yes.
So big question then. Right. How much would you be spending on one of these if you wanted to pick one up secondhand somewhere?
Okay, very interesting. To start off with, I did this article, as always, you know, I don't get inspiration by myself because I'm not that inspiring. I normally get people talking to me and saying, oh, you know, Daniel, I'm thinking of buying this car. What do you think? And then I say, oh, okay, let me do a story on it, or let me do some research on it. So the research becomes an article. That's how it normally comes out. So someone's wife was telling me that she wanted to buy one from her friend who was upgrading to a new Harrier, a brand new Harrier from UMW Toyota, because now with the sales tax reduction and all, the price has been quite favorable. So I said, okay, what model does she have and everything else? So it turned out that she has a unit which I think is one of the nicer looking ones, as you can see from the picture, the 2003 Harrier, which was the second generation. I think the styling is still today, still modern looking.
Mm.
And it's a one owner car, one owner in Malaysia. So from Japan, we don't know how many owners. When it came here, one owner. The current owner has maintained the car completely with just one workshop. And I know the workshop. It's actually a very good workshop that maintains a lot of high-end Toyota vehicles. They're not the cheapest, but they do a good job. And the car is going for about 40,000 ringgit. So when I heard the price, I said, wow, 40,000 ringgit. Why did she give you that price? He said, well, that's the price that was offered to her as a trade-in.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not charging her friend anything more. She said, listen, since you're trading in for me at 40,000, I might as well offer it to my friend. Now, when I did a check, actually 40,000 is a bit on the high side. Then I was thinking, why is the trade-in value higher than what is being shown on the classifieds? Because before this sales tax discount, this SUV was going for about 50 to 55, maybe the lowest is a 45. But now, because of the whole shakeup in the market, prices are as low as 35,000. So I think the 40,000 she's getting is probably an overtrade price. You get what I mean?
Mm.
It means the dealer is giving her a slightly better price to encourage her to buy the new car, even though the new car is with a discount.
Got it.
So I told her, I said, listen, 40,000, think about it. So I did some research. I found some other cars online. The lowest I found was 35. The best one, which was a 2006 model, hers is 2003. So 3 years difference. There was one which was initially advertised at 46. Now it's 39,000. And this is even before we pick up the phone and start talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I told her, I said, give the guy a call, see whether he can push it down to 35. So you know what this lady said? No, la, I think I'll buy my friend's one for 40,000 because I trust her and I trust reliability, which is a good answer.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you pay a little bit more, but you get a car which you know who's the owner, where they've taken it, the full service record. There's no wayang kulit in the sale and purchase.
Mm-mm. What sort of cars would people be cross-shopping? Because the Harrier is kind of unique, you know, in its age, right? As we mentioned, there wasn't, back in the day, you could only get either a Pajero or a Range Rover. So, you know, what would you be cross-shopping with?
Well, in this segment, the only real rival, I would say, is the second generation BMW X3.
Mm.
That second generation X3 goes for between 30 to 50,000, depending, because there was a 5-year span of that car and there's so many variants.
Yeah.
But if you take apple to apple in terms of features, the Harrier is number one. Number two, if you take apple to apple in terms of handling, the BMW is number one. The BMW has got very nice handling, even though it's an SUV. Mm-hmm. But the maintenance cost of the BMW will be much more than this Toyota Harrier.
Well, there you go then. Would you be rushing out and buying one of these, given the chance?
Well, if tomorrow my wife said she wanted a nice sedate SUV with little hassle, but she still wants to show, you know, the neighbors that we still got a bit of money, I think, you know, at $35,000, you can't really go very wrong.
And I've seen quite a few of these, you know, and obviously the grey market imports, yes, you know, they're the ones that I tend to have seen. I like them.
Yes.
You know, there's one that parks on my street. Yes. I'm not so sure I'd rush out and buy one, though, you know, if I had the money to buy one.
But, you know, Richard, with your height, because you're very tall, you will
I'd be sat in the back, right?
No, you'll be very comfortable.
You're driving for me.
Kind of so, because, you know, I'm Indian, you know, that's what we do. But exactly. You'll be very comfortable in the front seat.
Uh-huh.
With someone of your height sitting right at the back with you.
Right.
So that's how much space you got in this vehicle.
Arif can fit his golf clubs in then as well.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely.
Time for us to wrap up before somebody else gets personally attacked here on the show, because that's what we do and that's how much we love each other. Of course, you have been listening to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. We started off with some news updates and some car launches, wrapped up with that used car buying guide for the 2003 Toyota Harrier. How many other names does it have, Daniel?
I think two other names, huh, Arif?
Lexus RX
and Harrier XU30.
XU30,
Toyota Harrier, Toyota.
On that note, we'll wrap up.
Yeah.
This has been Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. We'll be back same time, same place next week. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.